Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your patience, and welcome to your Moving Forward Using Tools and Technical Assistance webinar. At this time, all participants are in the listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. I would now like to turn the call over to Mary O'Brien. Ma'am, you may begin.
Thank you very much. Welcome, everyone, to today's webinar on Moving Forward Using Tools and Technical Assistance. My name is Mary O'Brien, as the operator said, and I'm here representing the National Child Welfare Resource Center for Organizational Improvement, which is one of the two national organizations that are co-sponsoring today's webinar. We sometimes abbreviate the name of our organization as the National Resource Center for Organizational Improvement, or NRCOI. Today's webinar is co-sponsored and will be presented by the National Center on Substance Abuse and Child Welfare. Before we begin, we want to go over some logistics. So I'm going to ask Kathleen Otero with the National Center to do a little bit of that.
Hi, everybody. This is Kathleen Otero. Thanks, Mary.
Sure.
Just a couple of housekeeping issues. If you're obviously dialed into the telephone audio portion, if you're hearing me, but hopefully for those who are still trying to connect, we have the audio portion line here up on the welcome screen. If you are still attempting to connect to the webinar piece and you're having trouble, the 800 number for the GoToWebinar help desk and today's webinar ID is also provided. You also should have been able to access the handouts and materials for today's webinar session through the National Resource Center's website. And as well, that the PowerPoint presentation has the phone numbers and contact information in there as well. Wanted to do just a couple of quick clarification issues. As always, with new technology comes new challenges and new opportunities. So today is an attempt to use a webinar presentation as part of this teleconference session, Moving Forward Using Tools and Technical Assistance. There was a two-step part in the registration process for those of you who wanted to be connected to the teleconference line. That was what you were registering for through the National Resource Center on Organizational Improvement. If you wanted to be connected to the web portion, there was a separate email that was sent related to how to access the web portion, and that email had some instructions for how to go to the GoToWebinar website and put in your name and email address for accessing the web-based portion. In the last week, though, we had a very encouraging surge of interest from people who wanted to log into this web-based session. So what we did is, for whether or not you asked to be registered for the web portion, we just went ahead and manually registered you. So if you have a email in your inbox from GoToWebinar@Citrix with the heading line of today's webinar title, then you can click on that email to access the web portion of today's presentation. Otherwise, feel free to just listen in on the teleconference portion as well and follow along in the handouts.
Michelle, this is Mary O'Brien. Just to clarify on that, for participants, I think the email with the link that you need to click on to enter the webinar might have come from Michelle Freeman as well. So, and that would be titled Confirmation for Moving Forward Using Tools and Technical Assistance. But I mean, you might look for a message from Michelle Freeman as well.
Right. And again, if you're having trouble, some of the things that we can't control is if you're having trouble with your connection, if the connection is slow or you have an older computer, then those are some of the issues that unfortunately we can't do anything about today. But if you have trouble downloading any of the software or accessing the web piece, you can go to the GoToWebinar help desk phone line and ask them for assistance, for technical assistance.
This is Mary O'Brien. Let me say as well for folks on the line that if you're not connected to the website where you're seeing the screen with the phone number and the information, I want to just tell you that the PowerPoint slides that we'll be going through today are available on our website, the Resource Center for Organizational Improvement website as well. And that website is www.nrcoi.org. That's www.nrcoi.org. NRI, as in National Resource Center for Organizational Improvement, .org. At that page, you can click on teleconferences and click on the date of the session, and you'll find the PowerPoint slides for today's presentation if you've not been successful in getting into the web-based portion.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Great.
So,
maybe I'll just give a little bit more introductory stuff, Kathleen, and then you can begin with the content.
Great.
Is that okay? On that website that I gave you, this is Mary O'Brien from Organizational Improvement. There's also other handouts for today's session. In addition to the PowerPoint presentation, you'll find at that website a document called Agenda and Contact Information that has contact information for all of today's speakers. There are also five other files there that contain documents and information about resources that the presenters will be talking about today. Again, that website is www.nrcoi.org. You know, click on teleconferences and then look under the date for the handouts for today's call. I just wanted to start with a little bit more background before we begin. The Resource Center for Organizational Improvement is one of a group of national resource centers funded by the U.S. Children's Bureau in the Federal Administration for Children and Families, known as the Children's Bureau Training and Technical Assistance Network, with the purpose of providing training and technical assistance services to state and tribal child welfare agencies to help build their capacity to improve outcomes. The NRCOI is charged with an additional role of coordinating technical assistance across this network. In this role of coordinating technical assistance for child welfare agencies working to improve their services, we also want to promote awareness of the other technical assistance resources that are funded by the Federal Administration for Children and Families and that are available to agencies and tribes. One of these critical technical assistance resources is the National Center on Substance Abuse and Child Welfare. So we're pleased that they've agreed to join us in co-sponsoring two webinar sessions as part of our annual teleconference offerings. Today's session is part one of a two-part series, which we've called Being Successful, Meaningful Collaboration to Improve Outcomes. Part two of the series will highlight three states' experiences with collaboration, and it will be held on May 6th. I wanted to tell you before we begin that we've had a huge interest in today's call. Which indicates really the compelling importance of this topic of effectively addressing substance abuse issues. Based on our registration, we expect to have close to 100 or more lines of people calling in today, representing over 30 different states, lots of different representatives from child welfare agencies, providers in states, substance abuse, drug and alcohol agencies, and universities, all key partners and that need to work together around these issues. So we hope this session will give you some ideas of ways that you can strengthen your collaboration among all those key partners in states. We also welcome today's session a number of regional office administration for children and family representatives who've registered and people from other national organizations. As the operator said, the lines will be closed, but we will take questions at one point. And our presenters will also explain how the question session will work. So I will, at this point, stop talking and turn it over to the folks from the National Center on Substance Abuse and Child Welfare. We have Nancy Young, who's the director, and Kathleen Otero, who's already spoken to you, who's the deputy director. They have some guests with them who they'll introduce as well. So thank you very much, you know, for doing this call, and I'll turn it over to them to begin the presentation.
Great. Thanks again, Mary.
Thank you.
Again, this is Kathleen, and I'll just do some quick, just a little bit of information about how we're going to do questions and answers. Again, as Mary said, at the end of today's session, we'll open up the lines, and the operator will be able to allow people to ask questions through the teleconference line. But throughout the conference, throughout the presentation, you should have on what's called your dashboard, which is the dialog box that shows up on the right-hand side of your screen. You have a question and answer box. What we will be doing as staff on our side is if you have a question, you can just type it in, and we will be feeding questions over to our presenter throughout the presentation today. So if there are questions that you have that you want to just kind of feed to us throughout the presentation, feel free to do so just by typing into the question and answer box. And I guess that's about all we have to say about that. And I'll turn it over to Dr. Nancy Young.
Great. Hi, everyone, and thanks so much for joining us today. We're delighted to
worked with the National Resource Center on Organizational Improvement to put together this two-part session. And we have a couple of extra speakers that will be introduced as we get to some specifics about ways in which they have used some of the technical assistance products of the National Center. So let me just begin by the content that we're going to talk about today, a little bit about just what the National Center is, what we're doing, what we're about, the why of collaboration, why we exist, why the federal government thought that this was an important resource to make available to states and communities across the country, the how-to, how do we approach collaboration? What do we mean when we say go work with your alcohol and drug agency? What's the technology? What are the products? What are the ways in which we have put together some of that information about the how-to of collaboration? And then the resources, the types of resources that are available, the products that have been created, and then we'll do that question and answer session and be able to have some dialogue about some of these topics. The National Center on Substance Abuse and Child Welfare is a service of both the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration and the Administration on Children, Youth, and Families, the Children's Bureau Office of Child Abuse and Neglect. Our mission is to develop knowledge and to provide technical assistance. The developing knowledge piece we continue to do, but as we enter our second five-year contract that is with the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Service Administration, we are really trying to focus on dissemination and making sure that folks around the country are aware of the products and the technical assistance that were developed during the first 5 years that we were working from 2002 to 2007. So we're delighted with this opportunity because it really does fulfill the mission and the task of our second 5 years to disseminate this information more broadly. Let me start with then the why of collaboration. And one of the things that we'd like to do during using this technology is to ask some questions. So Kathleen, could you tell our participants about the poll and to do that piece?
Yeah, again, using the benefits of technology, we want to get a sense of who all is on the call today. We have some of your information, but we want to see how many people are here from the variety of systems that are represented in today's conference call. So we have a question here that we're posting. How many individuals are here from child welfare? How many of you are here from substance abuse treatment? How many of you here are from the courts or court professional system? And that includes judges, attorneys, child advocates. And then how many of you are here from health or hospitals or other sort of public health, medical services, and then other? So I'm going to allow about another 15 seconds for people to indicate that. And as Nancy mentioned, in the mission of the National Center, we are focused on bringing together the different systems, substance abuse treatment, child welfare, the courts, and the other critical partners that are important to bring together for collaboration on behalf of families affected by substance abuse disorders that are either in the child welfare and or family court systems. So I am going to now close the poll, and we got about 87% of the people who were on this call voted, and it looks like we've got about 52% here from child welfare, 14% from substance abuse treatment, 9% courts, 2% health hospitals, and 23% others. And I'm going to show the results to everybody. So I hope that was informative for you as well as for us to get a sense of who's on the call today. So thank you very much for participating in that poll.
Thanks, Kathleen, and very interesting to hear who's on the call today. And as you can see from the variety of disciplines represented just on the call today, we often run into the concerns and the different perspectives that different disciplines and system mandates bring to the work of families that are affected by substance use disorders and child abuse and neglect. And one of the things that we recognize is that the relationship between
substance use and child abuse or neglect is a very complex issue. It varies from site to site about which of these factors might loom greatest for them. The substance use pattern, for example, areas of the country that have been more recently affected by the increase in methamphetamine use versus the Northeast Corridor that may have some variation with a lot of opiate use. And so to some extent, the substance use pattern, but also the local policies and practices about what does that mean for states and for communities when they're trying to bring together services on behalf of families and with families to engage in this change process to stabilize their family. We recognize across the states and communities there's a variety of knowledge and sets of skills of different workers, and that variation also creates this sometimes complex relationship between the systems. And then clearly the access to health and social supports for families certainly varies across sites and is one of the factors that professionals often tell us about in terms of trying to work with their partners. One of the ways in which we have addressed some of those barriers, and you have a handout that is a summary of reports that were issued in the late 1990s on substance abuse and child welfare. And one of the organizing schemas that helps us to understand the ways in which families interact with the different systems and the ways in which it sometimes becomes complex for them as well as it is complex for us is to think about the different time clocks that are operating in the lives of families. And four critical ones that we often try to focus on and to synchronize, if you will, when we have providers and county systems and state systems and courts that are addressing these different time frames, the time requirements of the Adoption and Safe Families Act, the requirements of the length of time of treatment and what that means in a family stability for parents in particular to become stable and to be in that recovery process so that they can parent their children. Compared to perhaps the particular state's time clock under the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families and what that means in terms of income support for families, how it often may influence some of the other community supports related to housing and economic security for those particular families, and a very different time clock from the Adoption of Safe Families Act. And then if we think about those legislative required time clocks in the context of child development and the clock that doesn't stop, the one that keeps on ticking, if you will, regardless of these legislative mandates, and the fact that that child development clock moves fastest during that prenatal through the early childhood time period. When we work with communities, we try and ensure that there is a perspective that addresses the timing factors for families, the timing factors for the requirements of the various systems that are working together. And importantly, we recognize that there's a clock that is really on us. How quickly we as professionals, as families, as community members come together to put the pieces together so that these various legislative and developmental and the different ways in which timing affects our work get synchronized that makes sense and can ensure that the outcomes that we're trying to achieve across systems become that focal point. I mentioned just a bit ago the handout that is a summary of the reports that were issued on substance abuse and child welfare. Between 1998 and 1999, there were five national reports that were published, and you have the summary of those reports with the citations, and then a follow-up table that we tried to look across these reports that came out during this very short time frame and understand what all of those reports were saying about the barriers between the systems and then what their suggested strategies were. And as we work in communities and states, we find that these still hold true, that in particular, that again, the timing differences in the service systems, the knowledge gaps among staff in the system, and the lack of effective communication often act as primary barriers, if you will, while all of these that we've listed on the screen are very important for local jurisdictions to address, we find that those knowledge gaps and effective communication can often be the things that prevent practice from happening in a way that's most effective for families. As we then summarized those barriers, we also looked at the suggested strategies in the reports that were issued. And much of our work in providing technical assistance and our product development has run in concert with these strategies that were put forward. And in fact, the final report that we highlight in that 1988-1999 time period is the report to Congress that was in response to the Adoption and Safe Families Act, in which Congress asked the Department of Health and Human Services to issue a report on the all of the system and practice issues in substance abuse and child welfare. Their report that came out in 1999 entitled Blending Perspectives and Building Common Ground established 5 national goals: building collaborative relationships, assuring timely access to comprehensive substance abuse services, improving the ability to engage and retain families in care and to support their ongoing recovery, to enhance services for children, and to fill our information gaps. And again, these 5 broad national goals have been the organizing framework, if you will, of much of our work to ensure that we're addressing those national goals that were set by the Department of Health and Human Services. Subsequent to that report, there has been a great deal of activity at the federal level. Immediately thereafter, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Service Administration and the Administration for Children, Youth, and Families conducted regional state team forums to bring together policymakers and practitioners to focus on this issue within their own states. In 2002, the National Center on Substance Abuse and Child Welfare was established, and more recently, in the last year, a second 5-year contract was put forward with Children and Family Futures, our parent organization, to focus again on providing technical assistance and dissemination of the products that have been developed to states and communities. And then just last year, Congress appropriated funds to establish regional partnership grants to test out some of these ideas and test out some of the strategies that have been put in place across the country in different kinds of programmatic pieces and programmatic approaches. You see then the map. We'll be showing in just a moment. This is the map of the United States of where these grants are located. 53 regional partnerships across the country that have implemented or are in that first year of their grant, running either for 3 to 5 years, to again test out some of the strategies to create system linkages and to provide to the rest of the country a knowledge base about what works. So we are delighted with the progress of looking at these opportunities to improve collaboration and to learn from these partnership grants as they move forward over the next several years in establishing collaborative processes at the local level. The how-to then. So we understand these barriers. We understand some of the strategies that have been put forward by various entities in studying this issue in the late 1990s. The way that the Center for Children and Family Futures has approached the system linkages is to develop a way of looking at collaboration. And this model of thinking about the stages of collaboration comes from our president, Sid Gardner, who wrote several different pieces about the technology of collaboration and put forward this model in Beyond Collaboration to Results of thinking through the different phases and the stages that communities go through as they look at cross-system linkages and look at ways in which they are trying to change the system. Beginning with an information exchange, I think we have all participated in collaborative processes that the beginning is just trying to understand each other's acronyms, the way in which service systems operate within their system, as well as how they deliver services, how they engage with families, how they fund their services. This need for some basis of information that gets exchanged across systems is really the fundamental piece of the groundwork. And if we think about our children and what they need to do in order to crawl before they walk, we think of collaboration, again, in these developmental phases of information exchange being that first piece. And some then move on to say, let's do something that's a joint project. Typically, that happens with someone from the outside, either a grant or in the case, for example, of the regional partnership grant, some federal funding, monies that came from without, from outside of the current system to say, let's do something different. Let's create a project. Let's create a way in which we are providing services in a different way in a project and test out some things. And we think about these regional partnership grants really at that level of providing some joint projects. And clearly there are many, many communities and states around the country that have gotten to this phase of looking at joint projects and putting things together and putting pieces together in different ways than what they were working in the past. But you see that ladder up to changing the rules is a much higher step, if you will, and it sometimes can go a little crooked, that it goes in different paths, and sometimes it gets blocked there, that communities stay at that level of joint projects and never really getting to the point of changing the rules so that the project that may have been a pilot for a small number of families ever gets integrated into the entirety of the system so that all families who need access to those specialized services have the access to that. And changing the rules becomes much more difficult, and we think of changing the rules as really requiring us to look at the existing funding base. And how we change the rules means that we're really getting into the day-to-day practice of how professionals are working together, and we're getting into the day-to-day way in which we fund services to make sure that those rules coincide with the way things are funded so that families have access to the cross-systems kinds of expertise that we want to bring to this issue in a way that makes it available to all of the families, which is really that last stage of collaboration in looking at the changed system that has gone through this process to say all families will have access to this improved way in which we have tested out and said this is a better way of doing business. This is a way in which families are engaged with us in this process of looking at substance use disorders and child abuse and neglect. So as an organizing way of thinking through our work with communities and states, we also try and put together, if you will, some technology about what kinds of pilots are developed, what kinds of priorities are established in states and communities. This early work on a framework of defining system elements of the linkage points across systems came from work almost, 15 years ago almost now, in a committee of substance abuse administrators in counties and child welfare administrators from counties in California. And they allowed us to test out with them what are those system linkages that we want collaborative groups to work on. What are the most important bridges that we need to build across the system? As a way to assess then the effectiveness of the collaborative efforts, how do we understand the different values and the ways that community groups establish principles of working together, and some tools to assist those communities and states in measuring their impact. When we say, again, go collaborate with your child welfare system or go collaborate with your treatment agencies, what is the work of the collaboration that they need to pay attention to, and what's a way in which they can organize their work to help them get to those phases of being able to move their systems in different ways? So the collaborative practice tools that have been developed earlier from Children and Family Futures, and then more recently as we've refined these products as the National Center on Substance Abuse and Child Welfare, began with this idea that there are elements of system linkages and that those system linkages are the work of the collaborative. And we then provided some tools to help collaborative groups explore some of these system linkages and the ways in which they can use those tools to explore their differing values and the ways that they come to the collaborative table with different mandates and different principles and different ways in which they work with families through a collaborative values inventory that assists those communities in exploring those underlying values and beliefs. And then collaborative capacity instrument, which helps a community measure their system linkages. You can ask your workers, how do you think it's going in how we're doing screening and assessment across systems? How do you think it's going in exchanging information? How do you think it's going in the way in which we are training our staff and providing in-service education? So the capacity instrument allows communities to do some self-assessment of their progress that then is, in some ways, can be measured against what we refer to as the matrix of progress and system linkages. And well over 150 professionals have given us input into the characteristics of communities that have worked on these elements of system linkages. And what does it look like in a community that has done the basics in providing some cross-system linkages for families and those that are at more advanced levels of collaborative practice? And then finally, as part of the work of the National Center, a publication that came out about a year ago, we refer to as SAFER, Screening and Assessment for Family Engagement, Retention, and Recovery. And we're going to hear in just a bit from Nancy Hafer from Northern California about how they are using SAFER in the work that they're doing in their regional partnership. But let me talk just a bit about this idea of the elements of system linkages. What is the work of collaboration? We organize that work around these four concepts, that there is a mission that needs to come together in collaborative practice. There are some daily practice issues in how we engage with families and how we provide services to families and how we look at that change process with families. There are some system supports that need to be put in place. And then finally, how do we come together and look at common outcomes and the ways in which we will monitor our success? So some of the tools that we think through, again, in that collaborative values inventory, but there is a need to explore our missions in terms of our underlying values and the principles of our collaborative relationships as we embark on this process of looking at the ways in which we change practice with families and look at the client assessment processes, the ways in which we engage with families, the ways in which we deliver services to children, how we work with families and community supports, and how we work with related agencies. And let me just take a moment to mention that we know and we find repeatedly as we work with communities that the issues of mental health services for children, mental health services for their parents, and the domestic violence issues that, if you will, happen simultaneously sometimes with the families that we're talking about, we think of these as families with multiple vulnerabilities. And sometimes the mental health issues are those that make the family most vulnerable, sometimes the substance use issue, sometimes the violence in the family, particularly partner violence, that we have to make sure that those partners are also at the table as we're working with those related agencies to again, engage with families in this change process. And then we think about this idea of the system supports. If we have looked at our practice protocols and looked at the ways in which we want systems to work together better, what are the ways that we need to look at those systems issues of information systems, the ways that we train staff and provide staff development opportunities, and the ways in which we budget and create strategies for program sustainability as really the system supports that promote, that enhance, that are enable those issues that we just discussed under the family section of this with the practice issues that have to be put in place and the systems issues that have to be put there in order to sustain that change in practice. And then finally, how do we look at the outcome systems that are operating in child welfare and the outcome systems that are operating in substance abuse treatment and those that are under the mandates of courts to think comprehensively about jointly held outcomes, how we measure our single system outcomes in a way that really provides the glue of the collaborative. The outcomes of looking at the joint accountability and shared outcomes of safety, permanency, family well-being, and recovery as a way of, again, providing glue for bringing those pieces together. Let me turn then to going from a little bit of some of those abstract ideas of the philosophy of the way in which we approach collaborative work to talk about the specifics of technical assistance and the types of TA that is available. We organize our technical assistance in various levels, if you will, of intensity. And you see on the bottom of the screen the number of technical assistance requests that we have fulfilled since the origination of the National Center in September 2002, with most of our requests coming in for information, sharing of models. We get a lot of folks who say, who's put a substance abuse staff member in an investigations unit? And what's the experience of that? And could we talk to somebody who's got experience with doing this? We do a lot of linkage of models across the country with sharing that information and that expertise. Our second more intense level of TA, if you will, is when we actually engage with a particular requester or a community with providing some expert consultation on a particular topic or do some background research or provide some research that's already been established to a community who's struggling with a specific issue. And then what we refer to as level three often entails some either on-site work or webinar development work or teleconferences. We've done a series of webinars on specific kinds of models and sharing that information. But a third level, I guess you would say, of intensity in the amount of work that puts into and the level of effort that we put into developing some issue-specific kinds of products. And sometimes those are monographs or white papers, not just teleconferences or webinars of dissemination. And then our final, if you will, level four, intensive in-depth technical assistance in which we engage with a state, tribe, or county in a year and a half strategic planning process to look at each of those elements of system linkages and to assist them with some intensive consultative time with an expert that is trilingual. We usually refer to them as a professional who has expertise in substance abuse, child welfare, and courts, to be able to provide that outsider who comes in and facilitates and creates with that state or community or tribe a longer-term strategic plan about how they are going to move forward. And you see again at the bottom of the slide the number of times that we have engaged in those different levels of technical assistance. And then briefly, the types of technical assistance products that we have available, many, many different examples of practice and policy tools that have been developed by states and communities, ways in which communities have looked at their information and how they share information across systems, screening and assessment information, monitoring information, and how communities have looked at improving communication and, if you will, reducing the noise between the systems and really making their communication more effective. Different experts that we have to provide consultation on specific topics, again, some products that are on specific issues that we get many requests for. We'll develop that into fact sheets on, for example, prevalence, white papers on models of substance abuse specialists, and then many different ways in which we've brought together training resources, some online courses that we'll talk about in a bit, and lots of training materials that we have developed to be able to have trainers in child welfare or in the substance abuse treatment agencies have access to those materials that have already been developed. And then I mentioned the longer-term strategic planning process of level four of technical assistance. And what's coming up on your screen now is that same map with the regional partnership grants overlaid with the blue stars of the sites that we have worked with in in-depth technical assistance. And this is a map that gets me very, very excited because when you look at the amount of change that is going on across our country with states and communities coming together and saying we're going to do things differently on behalf of children and families, this just gets me excited every time I look at the amount of work that is going on, and we're so thrilled to be part of that and being able to provide some experience of other communities and some experience of what we've learned over the last 15 years, but most importantly, helping communities share with each other the ways in which they are addressing these issues and their experience and their strength and their hope for families as they move forward. I want to turn then to the handout and talk about, a little bit about the products that we have created in each of these elements of system linkages. I mentioned these different elements as we went through that, and each of the elements of system linkages, that 1 to 10 that was on that model slide, if you will, I'll now go through kind of quickly the kinds of TA products that are available in each of those different areas. I mentioned the Collaborative Values Inventory. It is a way for communities to anonymously explore their underlying values and beliefs across systems. It allows professionals to come to a table and to reach consensus about what they believe jointly and how they're going to move forward. There are a variety of communities and states and the national organizations that have issued examples of principles of working together across these service systems. And again, examples of MOUs and shared values and principles. One of those examples comes from work that was developed by the Child Welfare League of America, the National Council of Juvenile and Family Court Judges, the National Association of State Alcohol and Drug Abuse Directors, the National Indian Child Welfare League, and the American Public Human Services Association, as they came together and asked their members to help them develop principles of working together. And we encourage communities and states to look at that national work and to use that as a starting point for developing the ways in which they may put some principles together for working together. Then a variety of tools that have focused on the screening and assessment and engagement and retention of families in care. Importantly, the SAFER document that I spoke to just briefly earlier. There are also examples on our website from protocols that have been developed from the in-depth technical assistance states, a paper that is ready to be released on substance abuse specialists. It seems to be, it is, I would say, the common model across jurisdictions that the linkage for families between child welfare, the courts, and substance abuse agencies is configured in a way in which substance abuse expertise is brought from the treatment agencies to the child welfare agencies and provides that linkage for families and the bridge and the liaison role in a way that assists families in navigating between the systems. So it's very exciting to see the different configurations of these models that have been developed and to be able to share the common ingredients and the ways in which substance abuse specialists are being used in child welfare practice and being used in dependency courts to provide that linkage for families between the systems. And a paper that I know is going to be in hot demand and is in final stages of development in utilizing drug testing in the context of child welfare practice that we'll be excited to release soon. Let me then turn things over to Nancy Hafer for just a moment to have her describe for you the work that is underway in Northern California with a group of counties from the northern region of the state in utilizing SAFER in the work that they are doing as one of the regional partnership grants. Nancy, thank you so much for being with us today.
Sure, no problem. I'm happy to be here. We, like Nancy said, we have utilized the SAFER document in our work with four counties in Northern California who came together as a region to apply for the regional partnership grants through the federal government to impact methamphetamine abuse in parents with parents and child welfare. And we really used the SAFER document from the very beginning in developing our proposal, really using it as a blueprint. We had an idea. We had heard Nancy Young speak. She came up to Northern California and presented a model for collaboration that we were very interested in. And when we heard about the grants, we decided to apply for it. And again, there were four counties, and we were looking for a kind of a how-to guide, and lo and behold, there was the SAFER document, and it was just a really great blueprint for how to tackle something as large as partnerships can be, especially in, you know, four different counties that are trying to build partnerships in each county and then across the region. So we really look to the SAFER guide for examples of how to start, how to kick off a steering committee meeting. We really relied on the principles in the SAFER document. It's one of those documents that I carried around with me for a couple of days before I really started reading, and then when I read it, I thought, oh my gosh, this is, you know, one of those really wonderful gems that can help a great deal. So we used it to, again, do the proposal and then and the implementation of the grant. So the Center for Substance Abuse has been very helpful in assisting us with technical assistance phone calls and conference calls where we've been able to check in and make sure that, you know, we're kind of doing it the right way and working the document the right way. And we've been very pleased that really the tool itself, the document itself, has been in many ways much of what we need, and really, again, lays out this what can seem like a very complicated process into very bite-sized steps of collaboration. So each county has the tool or the SAFER document. Every member of the steering committee has it. Everyone has read it. We've had meetings reviewing the document, reviewing next steps. The four counties in Northern California that we're working with are very rural counties. They are very, very small. Two of them are considered actually frontier counties, which are even smaller than rural counties. So while they know all of the partners, they know, child welfare knows their alcohol and drug counterparts, they haven't had formal partnerships established. So and they also don't have formalized screening and assessment tools. So we've used the SAFER document to brainstorm potential screening tools. We're going to have several different subcommittees of our steering committee that will kind of tackle each one of those components of the SAFER document. So, again, not to kind of sound like it's this really, it's sort of the Bible for collaboration right now as we're viewing it here in Northern California. Is there anything that you would like for me to hit that I didn't cover, Nancy?
No, I think that's very helpful, Nancy. Thanks so much. And we were delighted to have Northern California say that they were going to use this. And many jurisdictions have told us that it's been very helpful. In particular, in the back of the document are a series of appendices that actually summarize the screening and assessment tools that are commonly used in substance abuse treatment and used in child welfare practice. And used to screen or assess children's development. So there's actually an appendices that goes through those different typical assessment tools. And then I think importantly, what we often hear from sites as most helpful are some templates of looking at the communication across systems to help communities understand what needs to be exchanged, at what point in the system does the Substance Abuse Treatment Agency need to exchange information with child welfare or the courts, or the other way around? And I think that's quite helpful.
Right, and that's one thing that I would add is the document has been extremely helpful in laying out the roles and responsibility for alcohol and drug child welfare and the courts in a very very non-threatening way, in which each organization has been really able to read through the list of recommended activities and what are the principles for each of those. Or responsibilities, I guess, for each of those organizations. And they've been able to read it and work through it in a way that I think has taken down some of their defenses and has really promoted collaboration and really looking at the issue as all of our issues instead of just sort of it's really taken down the silo approach, which I think has in each county is a little bit different, but has certainly helped has taken down some of those barriers. A few of the counties have had steering committee meetings in that specific county where they have reported that partnership has been stronger than ever, that they were able to have conversations because they weren't doing sort of this, well, it's your job or it's your, they weren't doing the finger pointing as much after reading through the document.
Great. Thanks, Nancy. And
sure.
One of the questions came in asking where's the best place to order a copy of SAFER. The Child Welfare Information Gateway does have that available. And if you run into any problems with locating that, please do email us. Our email address is on the last of the PowerPoint slides so that you have that, so you could email us and we'll make sure that you get a copy of it. Let me turn then to the next area of system linkages in looking at services to children and the ways in which we approach those issues, in particular those issues that are specific to children who may have been exposed to substances during the prenatal period. Again, the SAFER appendices include screening and assessment for children and youth, and some of our in-depth technical assistance sites have put together some parent partner program materials, which have been very helpful. we think about the services of children in a way that creates multiple opportunities for intervention. From those that are prenatally exposed, we know that there are can be some neurodevelopmental disorders that occur, and ways in which we have tried to organize that material in a policy and practice framework. And typically, we find that the focus of practice and the focus of our policy has been here at the identification at birth. And we help communities to look at that intervention and to back up just a bit and say, what's going on during the prenatal screening and assessment phase, in which engagement of a mother in substance abuse services is a critical preventive factor, so that we're not waiting until the birth event to actually provide services. And even the prenatal screening process is a bit late. What is our community's approach to pre-pregnancy awareness of substance use during the prenatal period and the effects that can be there for children? So we encourage, again, this idea that we're backing up into the system to say, identification at birth is a good thing that happens when we need to intervene at that point, but we really need to be focused on practice and policy that creates opportunities for parents to engage in substance abuse services when needed, and for systems to put in place some enhanced prenatal services so that prevention and remediation, if needed, is happening. And then if it hasn't happened in the prenatal period, the ways in which we are ensuring that child safety and that we're responding to that infant's need coincides with the response to the family's need, with both the mother and the father engaged in a change process that establishes that they can safely parent their child. And then if not at the birth event, or if the child is an older child who's coming into the child welfare system, making sure that we're addressing the older child, the preschooler and the adolescent, who may have effects of neurodevelopmental consequences from prenatal exposure that was undetected at birth, or may have some of the just environmental effects of living in a family with a substance use disorder in which their safety and their well-being have clearly been compromised by child abuse or neglect. So thinking through this idea that there are multiple opportunities to intervene and multiple opportunities to provide services and prevention for children to keep them from developing their own substance use disorder, we recognize that the probably highest risk of population in our communities are those children with both prenatal substance exposure, who are children of substance abusers, and children who have been victims of child abuse or neglect, and the need to address their intervention and, importantly, the prevention of their own substance use disorder, we think is just critical. So we try and organize our approach to what services are we putting in place for children in this way of looking at, again, multiple opportunities to provide intervention and prevention for children. Then I'll turn to the next element of system linkages in training and staff development. We are very excited by the online training opportunities that are available on the National Center's website. Three curricula that are in either on-site, on the website now, or ready to get posted. The Guide for Legal Professionals is in the web development phase. The content has been finalized, and we're very excited that we'll be announcing the release of that shortly. But two current online training resources, a Guide for Child Welfare Workers on Understanding Substance Abuse and Facilitating Recovery, and a Guide for Substance Abuse Treatment Professionals and helping them understand child welfare and the dependency court. Those online materials are available free of charge. These courses go through a series of modules that build a worker's knowledge. When a worker registers for the course and they get a phone call or get called away from their computer, they can go offline when they come back on and re-put in their unique registration number that they set. It takes them back to where they were in the course. And at the end of the course, they're able to complete a post-test that they can use for four CEUs. And those CEUs are available to them at no charge. And we were extremely excited to meet with the folks in Utah that took the online training materials and adapted them for their work in the state of Utah. And thank you very much, Mary Catherine, who is with us from the state of Utah, and Mary Catherine Jones, who has done the work to provide some supplemental materials to those online courses for the state of Utah. And Mary Catherine, let me turn things over to you for a moment so you can talk about the way in which you've implemented those online resources.
Well, thank you, Nancy. You know, we owe a lot to the National Center on Substance Abuse and Child Welfare for creating these online courses. They've enabled our child welfare system to do something that would have taken a ton of development time if we had needed to do it ourselves. And in that way, it saved us money and it helps us continue with other projects that we can work on to support families that are experiencing substance abuse. You know, just to let people know, since Utah is a bit of a small, quiet state, we don't have a lot of attention. So let me tell you a few things about our child welfare system. We're a state-administered child welfare system with our main office based out of Salt Lake City. We have five regions that have their own regional administration, and this structure enables us to have a single state training team that works to develop training that can be implemented for caseworkers all over the state. We have, in our regional administrations, individual training teams there that not only carry out the training that we create at our state office, but they can also have their own trainings that they develop that are customized to meet their local needs. That structure can be wonderful in terms of implementing training. And as you can imagine, Utah has a lot of very remote parts of the state. So one of the things that concerns us about training is that we can keep our training costs low by not having to have our caseworkers be spending a lot of time traveling, to attend a classroom training. We like the opportunity to use online training because it also makes sure that the training is consistent no matter where it's taught. So these are some factors that made the training developed by the National Center on Substance Abuse and Child Welfare very appealing to us. Prior to using this training, all of our caseworkers had about 13 weeks of training when they enter as brand new caseworkers. And that training basically covers the skills that we have in our practice model of engaging, teaming, assessing, planning, and intervening with families. And our approach to working with families is solution-focused and family-centered. In addition to that, the individual regions that are in our state often provide the caseworkers with some basic level of training on substance abuse. That training has tended to be drug identification training, meth lab identification training, how to conduct urine analysis testing, factors that can influence those test results, and the needs of drug-endangered children. While those trainings are certainly welcome, they don't answer a bigger concern that we've had, which was, so once you find out that there's a family that's affected by substance abuse, how do you work with them? So that made this training particularly valuable. The National Center on Substance Abuse and Child Welfare's training for child welfare professionals really goes beyond finding out if there's substance abuse, and really goes into when you find out that there is substance abuse, here's how to determine how the children are being affected. Here's how to determine how functional the parents are. And here are some ways that you can support them to either keep children in the home with those parents and help them to be safe, or if the children are placed out of the home, how you can work with both the children and the parents to increase the likelihood that they will be reunified. So, as you can imagine, because we haven't had a single statewide substance abuse training in the past, we had some systemic issues that were going on, and that includes how we work with our community partners. I think Nancy's done a great job highlighting some of the barriers that child welfare systems encounter when they are working with substance abuse treatment providers, the court system, public health professionals and medical providers, law enforcement, and the many dimensions that are part of child welfare work. And for us, those barriers translated into lack of communication, very different understandings of what substance abuse is, its origin, how it should be dealt with, lack of clarity, a lot of myths or misconceptions about how substance abuse affects children. And then, of course, as a lot of us face, a widespread belief that substance abuse is a moral issue or a personal problem that either is somehow isolated from children or, you know, on the other hand, we encounter the belief that, well, if the parents use substances, then they don't honestly care about their children or, you know, somehow deserve to be punished for that. And unfortunately, those myths can extend to many of our providers. And so our caseworkers would encounter situations such as judges who decide that because a parent has a dirty UA or hasn't shown up for court or has relapsed, that they shouldn't have visitation with their children for a certain amount of time. Treatment providers who tend to focus exclusively on parents and not really be aware of how children might be affected by substance abuse. Or when we do have families that are involved in both child welfare and substance abuse treatment, their plans may not be coordinated in a way that's most supportive to the parents and the children. So we felt that the best place to begin to build collaboration is to, you know, take care of some of those myths and facts that people have about substance abuse within our own system. And then hopefully, as our trained caseworkers begin to work with treatment providers in a more deliberate and strategic way, that we will also be able to start working on the collaborative values and determining what we do have in common that can help us to support the families. So the specific reason that after considering many options for training that we chose the curriculum developed by the National Center on Substance Abuse and Child Welfare was that, it, as I mentioned earlier, it has one content that can be accessed by anybody at any location throughout the state, and we know that the quality of the training is consistent across geography and over time. We know that the quality of the information is very high because we, you know, the National Center on Substance Abuse has had a lot of research products. They're experts in the field, and it was a reasonable time frame that was used. I think it took most of our caseworkers about 3 to 4 hours to complete the training. And caseworkers really were interested in the course because they could fit it into their busy schedules. As I'm sure that most of you experience in your own work, caseworkers are frequently having to jump up and put out fires, answer the phone, deal with people coming in, run out on a crisis call. And so it's hard for them to sit through a long training. they really liked how this particular tutorial enabled them to stop wherever they were, go out, take care of an issue, and when they came back, even if their computer had been turned off, they could log back into the tutorial and they would end up right on the page where they had left.
Thank you very much, Mary Catherine. In thinking through the process that you've gone through to develop these manuals, we really appreciate you sharing that. We're going to move on just so that we are making sure that we leave a little bit of time for some questions at the end. I think if folks have questions for Mary Catherine, we'd be happy to refer those on to you if someone wants to email us. And to let you know that the manuals that Mary Catherine developed with the other folks in Utah are on the National Center website and allow workers to get some specifics about things in Utah that they wanted to be able to customize. So, again, we really appreciate the work that they have done, and we think that they are great examples for states and communities to be able to take this online course that is geared to having it as accessed from across the country and really customize it for their own specific needs. Again, those online training materials are on the website, and we will have the guide for legal professionals out very soon. We are also working on training materials for state legislators, and we're very excited by the partnership with the National Conference of State Legislatures to develop some resources for them that will be specific to their training needs. There's also a training package that has been developed that creates modules on substance abuse, mental health, co-occurring disorders, and children's mental health, as well as collaborative practice. Will be a PowerPoint and facilitator's guide that will be on our website shortly that will provide those training materials to trainers around the country. And those materials are ready at present, as is the legal online coursework, even though it hasn't yet gone through the web programming. But if you're in urgent need of the content of that, please do email us for that. We have, as you might expect, a lot of questions about how do you budget for this, how do you sustain your programs, and we've put together some white papers on funding comprehensive services and more recently on specifically the federal sources that fund family-centered treatment for women with substance use disorders. And we're, again, very happy that this is something that will be released very quickly that will be a resource for, I think, many states and communities in which we have taken the work of the Center for Substance Abuse Treatment in developing the comprehensive model for women and children in their clinical services and clinical supportive services and community supports that are needed to ensure that women and their children can engage in recovery. And each of those service elements are defined and the source of federal funding for those service elements are defined and ways in which states and communities can access those monies. So we're very excited by the Funding Family Centered Treatment white paper that it's much longer than a short paper, so therefore it's a little funny to call it that, but those materials are in, again, their final phases of clearances, and we're just delighted to be able to make that available. So be looking for an email from us if you're not yet on our listserv to get our updates. Send us an email. We'll get you into our queue so that whenever we do updates for information, you'll get an email from us letting you know about that. There are also some materials about information systems and how communities have developed some shared outcomes. Again, I mentioned the communication protocols in states. I also want to draw your attention to the review of alcohol and drug issues in the CFSR reviews from round one and an ongoing project that we have in looking at the round two CFSRs and program improvement plans. On our website is a detailed listing of every state and what they said about alcohol and drug issues through their CFSR process. So you can get information about what your state said and what they put into their program improvement plan. And then ways in which the regional partnerships, most specifically, are looking at cross-system indicators. What can you get from the existing information system through child welfare using, excuse the acronyms, the AFCARS and NCANS data systems that child welfare are familiar with on the substance abuse treatment side, the TEDS data system that they are familiar with. How do you look at those existing information systems and pull out data that in order to sustain your collaborative process and to sustain the outcome monitoring that is needed across systems? So we're excited by those materials, and please email us if you would like more information about the webinar that we are putting together for the regional partnerships. Or if you're interested in the work that is underway in the regional partnerships on cross-system data linkages. Finally, then, on the National Center and how you access technical assistance, we would say first visit our website. Look for these different products and protocols and examples of information that we have developed. Send us an email that with your question, with your comment, with something that you may need, we can respond to that and make sure that you get access to that information. And we're very happy to be able to respond to those questions and comments. And we certainly have taken the questions that we get into consideration as we have developed specific products and try and respond more comprehensively when we have things like drug testing or screening tools that came up repeatedly to be able to then put the product development behind that to issue those kinds of monographs in a larger scale. Let me ask then the moderator for the phone call to open up the line. We have probably about 7 or 8 minutes for some questions. So telephone operator, would you please come on and open the line for questions and answers?
Yes, ma'am. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question at this time, please press the 1 key on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered, you may press the pound key to remove yourself from the queue. Once again, if you have a question at this time, please press the 1 key on your touchtone telephone.
Well, operator, as we're waiting for, this is Kathleen, as we're waiting for questions to be queued in, I'm going to just quickly demonstrate to people on the phone call today and on the webinar the National Center website. So just let me know when questions start coming in, but in the meantime, this is the National Center website, the front page, and for individuals interested in accessing the SAFER tool, if you go to the National Center products page, there's a list of examples of state products and policy tools and protocols. Nancy mentioned, for example, out of SAFER, there are a variety of communication protocols that we put together, but from the states and communities that we've worked with, we also have examples of communication protocols that they've developed, examples of engagement and retention, interagency agreements, screening and assessment protocols, that, and other sorts of training and toolkits that have been developed by a variety of states and tribes, as well as here is where you would access screening and assessment for family engagement, retention, and recovery, the PDF document. If you would like the electronic copy. Also, if you're interested in where to find our online tutorials and training, well, it's right here, this button on the website. Click on it, and you have the ability here to register, provide a username and password just so that you can come in and out as needed. And here is where you would access the information and registration for our online training and tutorials, as well as the participant workbook and supervisor handbook that Mary Catherine Jones was talking about is also available here on this online tutorials and training page.
Pardon me, we do have a few questions.
Great.
Our first question comes from Martha Clark. Your line is open.
Hi, Martha.
Hello, Nancy. This has been wonderful. Thank you. My question is whether or not you are aware of any research looking at practice models for substance-exposed newborns, whether there is any evidence-based, if there are evidence-based practice about whether or not for Child Protective Service workers, it is better to have, say, a specialized unit that would work with the hospitals and work with treatment providers, or if it's if that is a better model than for it just coming into the regular through the regular screening process. I'm in a large inner city, a large city. With a lot of opiate abuse?
Well, I, off the top of my head, I can't say that I know of any research about the systems pieces of how child welfare may be organizing their response. Certainly in the large jurisdictions, that's what we typically see. And in the jurisdictions who have prioritized this population to ensure that they have an appropriate program response, we certainly see that that is the way in which child welfare organizes themselves. One of the interesting models that we're hearing about more recently is dedicated staff to work with specific treatment providers. So if you have a treatment agency that is looking at ways in which they're connecting to the substance abuse treatment agencies, that they dedicate staff so that they are certain staff who are working with certain treatment agencies. So if you have a women and children's program, that they reassign those mothers and children to a specific unit so that the bridge to that treatment agency is a much shorter bridge, that there are child welfare staff that are developing expertise to work with the treatment agencies.
Very good. Thank you.
And our final question comes from Beth Ann Stratton.
Hello, this is Beth Ann Stratton from Davenport, Iowa. I work for Department of Human Services. And I see that you have two regional partnership grants in Iowa. Is there a way that we could find out who exactly you're working with in Iowa so that we can dovetail our services with them?
Yes, absolutely. We would be delighted to do that. It's one of the programmatic technical assistance pieces that we're embarking with the regional partnership grants to make sure that they're connected and connected to their state agencies. You could email us, and we will make sure that you get the contact information and the abstract from your particular state. Anyone who's on the call that would like to know about the regional partnership grants in your state, please do email us, and we'll make sure that you get those abstracts. And I'm actually looking at Kathleen, because this is something that I think we probably could get on to the National Center website pretty quickly. I'm getting shaking heads. Yes, we will do that, because we have those abstracts and the contact information listed by state, and we'll get that posted onto the National Center website. But in the short run, send us an email and we'll get that information to you. It's very exciting what's going on in Iowa. Upper Des Moines and then the Administrative Office of the Court are the two grantees with some different program models, but family treatment courts that are being developed out of the Administrative Office of the Court in the state of Iowa. And we're very excited about the work that's going on there.
Okay, thank you so much.
Great. Okay, this is Mary O'Brien from the research.
Mary, hold on. We had one more question come in through the website.
Great. Yeah.
We had a question with regards to technical assistance, Nancy. Is there information available on what other agencies are utilizing to track how well their programs are working? We have someone from a county who is attempting to develop an automated database to track screening, assessment, and outcomes?
Yes, there is some expertise related to that issue now with actually a webinar that we're developing for the regional partnership grants to give examples of how communities have created a linkage between identifying children in their child welfare data set and parents in the treatment data set to be able to provide a method for ongoing monitoring of their outcomes. And we would be happy to share that information with you. There is also a report that we did on cross-system data that may be helpful as we looked at indicators for the regional partnership grants, got into a lot of detail about those indicators that are needed out of both data systems to be able to put that information together in a monitoring and a tracking way. So we'd be happy to share that with you. Again, please send us an email. We actually, I think, have your email now through the registration for the webinar, and we'll make sure that you get those materials, but follow up with us if that doesn't exactly answer your question. So let me turn things over to Mary O'Brien, who will wrap up the session for us. Thank you all very much for your participation today. We really appreciate being able to share this information with you, and we look forward to hearing from you.
And thank you very much to Nancy Young and to Kathleen Otero from the National Center on Substance Abuse and Child Welfare, and to Mary Catherine Jones from Utah and Nancy Hafer from California for sharing your experience with us. That was really helpful. Thank you. I think if you were in the queue and didn't get your questions answered, you should go ahead and email to the National Center on Substance Abuse and Child Welfare. I'm sure they'll be happy to get back to you. If you've been listening on an audio line and have not been on the web-based portion, I want to tell you again that the PowerPoint presentation that the presenters went through today is available on the National Resource Center for Organizational Improvement's website, which is www.nrcoi.org. You look under teleconference and the date, and you can find that PowerPoint presentation. I want to ask everyone online, too, to fill out the evaluation form for the webinar session today. The link was in the email that you got from Help Kids. You will also have an email in your inbox that was sent during this session with the webinar evaluation form. And if you could fill that out and give us your feedback, that would be really helpful to us in terms of improving these sessions in the future. We wanted to invite everyone to attend the second session in this two-part series, which will be held May 6th, States and Communities Sharing Their Experience, Strength and Hope for Recovery for Children and Families. If you've not registered for this session, you can do so at the teleconference page on our website that I mentioned earlier, www.nrcoi.org. Also, a playback option will be available for today's session within a few days at that website. If there are people who you think might appreciate hearing or seeing this presentation and who weren't able to be here today. So again, thank you very much to everyone for coming, and thank you to our presenters for giving us all this wonderful information. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, thank you for participating in today's program. This does conclude the program for the day. You may all disconnect and have a wonderful day.